Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. You are here on the Brad Sesmatt Show on Sports360AZ.com. And that's right, it's time for another hostile takeover of the Brad Sesmatt Show. I'm not Brad Sesmatt. I am Devin Henry, actually, filling in for Brad today on the Brad Sesmatt Show. And we are going just about everywhere, and you know what it means when I take over this mic. Yeah, we're going to talk about racing. This Sunday, it's the start of the NASCAR season. The Daytona 500, the Great American Race, is this Sunday. To talk about it and also the renovations to ISM Raceway in Avondale, Arizona, we are bringing on someone who's been very successful at Daytona in the past few years. That is Michael McDowell, the driver of the Front Row Motorsports Ford Mustang number 34. He joins the show a little bit later on today, and we will talk about the Daytona 500. I'm hyped. I don't know if you are or not, but we will get you hyped here later in the show. But before we get anywhere going over to Daytona Beach, Florida, which would be a great place to be in, I think, right now, besides the rain going on. But before we get there, Brad will be chatting with Hot Shots Radio color commentator and the three-time Super Bowl champion, Del Hellestray, and also the president of the Hot Shots, Scott Brubaker. Hot Shots win their very first game in franchise history. They are undefeated as a franchise, so we'll talk to them a little bit about that. And also, moving forward, how this team is looking, and they're looking pretty good right now from just about every version of this team, from every helm. We're brought to you, and the rundown is brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. Do that with life insurance. I know it's hard. I guess I'm only 22, so maybe I'm not the best one to be talking about it. But at the end of the day, you want to make sure that you and your family are protected if anything happens. Be sure to go. You know, Brad is licensed with Sagicor. And if you watch this, you probably trust Brad. Brad isn't just going to go and license himself with some random sponsor because of money or because of he would think it's cool. He's doing it because he believes in Sagicor and what they're trying to do to help you out. So be sure to give Sagicor a call. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. But before we get to talking about the Hot Shots, it is the day that catchers and pitchers are heading on over to get ready for spring training and to get us ready for the reporting day, the first day out there today. We have Jordan Hamm, our reporter. He is live out at D-back spring training. Jordan, it's great to have you. You're not in the studio today, but you are now live over at Salt River Fields. Is it safe to say, we've talked about ASU football not being spring ball, it's winter ball. I know it's been a little bit warmer today, but is it safe to say that this is the beginning of winter training?
I think it's transitioning nicely into spring training, definitely. I mean, I remember last year coming into camp the first couple of weeks. It was pretty brisk. Wasn't as bad this morning, but just a lot of excitement here. I think a lot of guys actually have been here. I know that today is when pitchers and catchers are supposed to report, but there are already position players here. And from the sounds of it, sounds like a lot of players were already here in January getting work done here at the facility.
Arizona's not a bad place. That's why they have spring training here. And, of course, the hometown team coming on over. But just like any spring training, a whole load of moves, a boatload of moves happening past few weeks, January and February. Has anything, you know, exceedingly caught your eye by a sign or something unique in all the pitchers that they have just brought on the roster to start up spring training?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at Greg Holland, you know, this is a guy that 2 years ago was the National League tied for the National League lead in saves. And this is a very established guy. He kind of had a tale of two half seasons, if you will, last year with the Cardinals, really struggled, moved over to the Nationals in a lesser role and really kind of flourished under a one ERA. So I think the Diamondbacks are just looking at that sort of versatility. And you look at the back end of the bullpen, you have him, you have Yoshi Hirano, you have Archie Bradley. You know, you're not short on options. And I think when you look at what the rotation looks like now with Patrick Corbin leaving, I think, you know, what they're trying to do is just shorten the game. So, you know, a big time, you know, free agent signing for the rotation that'll can cost a pretty penny. And you know that they're, you know, having to get creative with their payroll. But if you can, you know, get quality relievers and make, you know, ask your pitchers to go 5-6 innings and then you can kind of shut it down, you know, with a really good bullpen. I think that's kind of where they're looking to go, at least early on this year. But it's been a slow offseason, so there are still plenty of really good baseball players out there. And I wouldn't be surprised seeing the Diamondbacks add even more as spring training progresses.
As you mentioned, no Corbin. Goldschmidt got traded away. There's been a lot of players no longer on the roster from last year, a lot of leaders on this team. Spring training is the very first amount of guys coming over. It's the first time that the clubhouse is all together. And as you mentioned, position players are coming in right now as well. Who's the leader right now? Could you name a couple of leaders right now who, with no more Paul Goldschmidt, no more Patrick Corbin, a few other names as well, who's taking the leadership inside of the dugout? Sorry.
I don't think that it's really that different from last year. Yes, you know, obviously the three guys that have departed were certainly leaders, but you look at David Peralta, you look at Archie Bradley, you know, those are guys that I think are more vocal leaders. I think, you know, David Peralta in the clubhouse earlier today, he was walking around talking to just about everybody. And even with the new coaches, he was kind of getting up to speed with them, kind of seeing what they like to do, kind of their style. So I think that those two guys jump out immediately to me as potential leaders that could kind of step in for these three that have since departed from the team.
Now, I was just talking to our chairman of the board, Kennedy Wilkerson. She's doing some stuff with the D-backs. They're really kind of a fun group, it always seems like. Is there anyone that you are really interested in talking to before spring training gets started? Not on the field, but off the field. Someone that's just a lot of fun to get to know in that D-backs roster.
You know, I'm just intrigued to get to know some of the new additions. You know, Luke Weaver, Carson Kelly, the both major league level guys that came over in that Paul Goldschmidt trade. You know, I had one interview with Carson Kelly, you know, right when he was traded, and he seems really insightful and comes from a baseball family. So that's always of intrigue to me. And then Merrill Kelly, a guy that's vying for a starting spot in this rotation. He grew up here. He went to Desert Mountain High School, Yavapai, ASU, but had to kind of take his career to Korea to kind of change the way that he does things. So I think that he has a really interesting story as well, and definitely intrigued in learning kind of what has, you know, what's really come of his career as he makes his way back to the States and Major League Baseball.
A lot going on today, a lot going on here in the next couple of weeks. Jordan Hamm is out at spring training. He's going to have some great stories coming out on Sports360AZ.com. Also the host of the Diamonds in the Desert podcast. No baseball in the past couple of months, but you've had some really nice podcasts up on the website. I know you got so much more to say and so much more to do. I'll leave it at that, though. And if anyone wants to hear more about the D-backs, you have more stuff coming up and also the Diamond in the Desert podcast. Thanks, Jordan.
Appreciate you, buddy.
I appreciate you. Jordan Hamm Skyping on in from Salt River Fields with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Looking forward to spring training. Hopping on up here in just a little bit. And before we get to a commercial break, I do want to talk about, we do have a Hot Shots heavy show today. So looking at the Arizona Hot Shots, like I mentioned, they are undefeated in franchise play. Yeah, they're 1-0. But still, nonetheless, it was impressive. I was almost surprised. The quality of football is great. I watched all three games that were available in our market here in Arizona. That being the Apollos game was at the exact same time as the first game of the day on CBS, which had the Memphis Express playing, who will be the next Hot Shots opponent. But I was really kind of impressed at the football play. And the best team that I think that I saw all weekend long, of course, I didn't get to see the Apollos because they were off, but it was the Hot Shots. The Hot Shots looked fantastic, and I think that's behind a lot of O-line play. When you look at some of these other teams that had their first time going out, this is the big reason why the AAF, the Alliance, has begun, was to develop quarterbacks and offensive linemen. And when you have an offensive line that, in my mind, seemed pretty set from the get-go, of course, the Stallions, it's a small sample size. It's one game and some practice games a couple weeks ago. That's all you have to go off of here. So moving forward, how do you know exactly what you're going to get? Now, week three, you once again play the Stallions. So that's kind of a given because you've seen their playbook now. So you might be able to go out and get another win. But nonetheless, when you're playing Birmingham or you're playing Atlanta or you're going out and playing these other teams, you don't have much to go off of. So this first game, when you have your offensive line playing well and you have the offensive player of the week in John Wolford, who, I mean, not even Jeff Munn on the radio broadcast was 100% sure when the offense came out who would be at the quarterback position for this game. Wolford wasn't the guy that they drafted first. It was Trevor Knight. But he went out in camp and he impressed everyone. Talk about a league of second chances, because that's what this is. It's a league where everyone who didn't make the NFL has the opportunity to come out and perform and impress on this level. Now you have all this film on you, and Wolford did phenomenal. He hit a lot of great targets. I think that was the best offense that I saw. You know, even the Orlando Apollos, they didn't have a great game because I wasn't too impressed by the defense. But 40 points is, let's just say it's 40 points at the end of the day. The hot shots right now and before preseason, Vegas' favorite to win the championship. CBS Sports on their latest power rankings, they said that the hot shots might be a chalk-in. If you haven't been to a hot shots game yet, you might want to go out because the level of play seemed pretty dang good to me. And they look like a team that might be able to win the first championship in a league that, in my belief, is going to last more than a year like some other football leagues. Looking at Sunday, another big Sunday, I'm going to watch the Daytona 500 directly after that. Hot Shots game is going to be on. They will be playing the Memphis Express. When you look at the power rankings that CBS Sports put out, the Hot Shots are number one in the power rankings. The Express are number eight. There's a write-up on all of them except the Express. The Express write-up for the power rankings is just a YouTube video of a person face-planting at the start of a track meet. Sounds like a good way to get win number two in franchise history. It might just happen. You're going to want to check it out. They're going to be on the road this week at Memphis, but you have the ability to watch them on television, or you just tune into the radio. Jeff Munn did a great job in his first game with the Arizona Hotshots. Great to hear him back doing play-by-play, back on radio. Always good to hear Jeff Munn's voice over the speakers in my house. Yes, mute that TV, guys. Put it on your radio, put it on your computer, whatever. But there's plenty more Hot Shot stuff coming up. I'll shut up now, get you guys along. Brad will be joining the show once again here to start off things. First of all, Dale Hellestray will be joining the Hot Shots color commentator who worked with Jeff Munn. Hellestray also knows a little bit about football. He has three Super Bowl rings, give or take. He knows something about football. And then after that, we have the president, Scott Brubaker, joining in with Brad Sesmatt here on the Brad Sesmatt Show. I'm hosting for now, Devin Henry, but Brad will be back on the other side of the break talking some Hot Shots football. Stick around.
Let's dive further into the Arizona Hot Shots now for a minute. 1-0 off the start of the season. Very strong showing on opening night. Dale Hellestray, three-time Super Bowl champion, radio analyst of the Hot Shots, among other duties. Dale does national work on the NFL and on college, and it's good to hear him doing the games here with the Hot Shots as well. All right, I'm going to ask you a two-part question here, Dale. Part question number one, was the caliber of football what you expected it to be from a former player's standpoint? Second part of that question is, from a broadcaster's standpoint, how was the quality of play?
Well, you know what? To me, as I was watching the game unfold, number one, opening game. I go back to my NFL experience and go, boy, you get to play four preseason games. First game, still, usually there's sloppiness, penalties, turnovers, things like that. You know what? I didn't see a whole lot of that last night, just speaking of the Hot Shots game. And as far as the caliber of competition, here's the thing that it's, whether people know this or not, I mean, there's 400 guys playing in this league. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to remember, first week of September every year, the NFL teams have to go from 90 to 50-ish. So my arithmetic is not all that good, but you know, it's about 45 guys per team times 32 teams. There's a lot of good football players who are let go. You know, that for maybe your 40 time is, you know, 1/100 of a second slower than the other guy, or you made one catch in a preseason game that got you that roster spot over the other guy. And this gives those guys an opportunity to showcase their skills. The other thing from a former player's perspective that I like is that they've simplified things. As far as defensively, you can only rush five, and you're not going to see a whole lot of exotic blitzes because they want to see receivers line up against defensive backs. Can you get open? Can you cover? They want to see offensive linemen. Can you block that defensive end one-on-one? Not we tricked you into blocking the wrong guy. I want to see, can you block him? And I think that's going to pay huge dividends for these kids as they go forward through this season.
Your math is really good from SMU and Saguaro, by the way. So just so you're clear on your math.
Well, I appreciate that.
No, of course. I would talk with Dale Hellestray, three-time Super Bowl champion. He is the analyst on the radio side for the Arizona Hot Shots. Rick Neuheisel and Phil Savage, talk to me a little bit about head coach, general manager, and putting a roster together and what struck you about opening night and moving forward.
Well, the thing being out of a couple practices last week, the number one thing that jumped out to you if you get out there is the fact that they're having fun. I mean, this is high energy. Everybody's yapping and talking and laughing and working, but it's working and having fun at the same time with some excitement, which I think then that spills over into the game. You know, I think the other thing, you look at these teams, whether it's the Hotshots or the Stallions or any of the other six teams, is the fact that these kids who are playing love the game, know it's probably their last shot, and so they're going to work their tails off, which kind of makes it easier on you as a coach. You're not motivating guys. These guys aren't, you know, didn't just sign a $50 million deal, and you got to worry about trying to keep them motivated. They're all trying to get there, which makes it a lot more enjoyable when you're coaching them.
Dale, from the standpoint of XFL, the USFL, we've seen leagues come and go. What is the staying power, in your view, of this league? Or, come on, Brad, it's 1 week. Let's not get too high off this.
The way I look at it is the one thing that this league has going for it is the fact that it is not trying to compete with the NFL. It is trying to be a complement to the NFL. And let's face it, Brad, the thing is, with the new CBA and the NFL, these kids who get cut that first week of September, yeah, you can go lift and you can go run, but you can't do anything football-related till next training camp, really, because even the mini camps these days, you know, there's no contact and stuff like that. So how, as a right tackle, offensive lineman, am I going to get better playing football? As a quarterback, I can throw against air. I can do 7-on-7 stuff. How am I going to get better when somebody's rushing me? Same thing running routes and covering. So all these guys are getting reps, and now it's on film, and these guys get to take a look at it. So I guess that was a long way of saying I think the way that they have staying power is that they're trying little nuances that I'm not so sure haven't come down from the NFL, the, hey, look into the replay booth and hear the guy talk and things of that nature. Hey, don't have a kickoff. I'm sure that Bill Polian has had conversations with, you know, Park Avenue in New York about what would you guys like to see, and they're going to take some of those things, I have a feeling, and put them into work at the NFL, and they'll have some of them that they won't, but they're going to be a complement to the NFL, not in competition.
I mean, you had a great career, Dale, when you look at it, with four NFL teams and the Super Bowl championship. You've been a broadcaster now, so now you're on both sides of the street. Did you miss the kickoff on opening weekend? Were some of the rules like this is over the top, the pace of play being 2 hours and 40 minutes rather than 3 hours and five? I mean, I'm curious from your perspective, all of the above around this league and how you see it.
Okay, well, I'll your last point first. You know, doing college games for the last 5-6 years, Brad, they've turned into 4-hour marathons.
Yeah.
Even some of them, you do a Big Ten championship, Brad, and it's 4 hours and 15 minutes. That's ridiculous in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So the pace of play, I don't know of anybody who would go, you know, like, oh, I think the game needs to take longer to compete. It's weird when you go do the coin flip and whoever defers or whatever ends up getting the ball, they just place on a 25-yard line. But if you look at the NFL, how many kickoffs do you see actually return?
Sure, sure.
Or is it just a two-minute commercial before the kickoff, then another commercial to come back to start on the 25-yard line? You know, so it looks different, kind of feels different, but I'm not so sure that most people can get pretty used to that. And so some of those things, I think anybody would say, if you can play the game in under 3 hours, that's a good thing. Number one. Number two, I think you're going to see good competition. And as this thing unfolds. Does it have staying power? Does it not? I just think that the NFL realizes with all these rules that they've changed, especially in the off season, that they need a place for these guys to get better at playing football, not run around in gym shorts.
I got you. No, I agree with you on that. Appreciate the time and insight as always, Dale. Thanks.
You got it, Brad.
There's Dale Hellestray with us. And again, he's doing the color commentary for the Hot Shots. They have their second game of the season against Memphis this coming weekend. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. So with one game in the books now for the Hot Shots, they turn their attention towards Memphis. And I'm trying to move the narrative forward because there's been a lot today on whether it was a good experience, great experience, not a great experience, whatever. This is the first step forward. Eric was talking about it earlier, about how he loved it as a fan. Didn't have a camera in his hand, wasn't down on the sideline. I thought the whole weekend was a big success for a league that starts up. Are there hiccups? Sure there are. The president of the Hot Shots is Scott Brubaker, and I've asked Scott to come on board to talk about the highs, the spots they want to get better at, and what the overall vibe was nationally about the weekend. I appreciate you coming on. I know you've been having meetings today, so give me your feel on the first weekend.
Yeah, you know what? It was a really, really good weekend for the Alliance and a really, really good weekend for the Hot Shots. You know, I said to my team, my business team this morning, I'm like, hey, listen, if we're in a pass fail world right now, this was a really big pass. And so, you know, we're excited. I thought the league, the Alliance got off to a rousing, you know, success with the game on national television. We had the San Antonio game here. It was a really good game. The crowd was fired up. CBS did a tremendous job of producing the game and then framing it in the right way. And you know what? We beat out the NBA national game Saturday night. You know what? I don't think we have too many complaints, Brad. I think it was a great first step for us.
Yeah, and I know that in just sitting and visiting with you, Scott, the whole thing has been, let's not screw it up. Let's just go out there and do our best. And I didn't see anything nationally. And yeah, there's going to be fans that are going to say, wow, Mike Bercovici gets his head taken off on national television with this new league. And this is what I used to watch in football. And for Mike, that's going to be his calling card 20 years, 30 years, 40 years from now. Yeah. And the Hot Shots game got a number as well. And so it's not like this is not going to be consumed by people. Why do you think that there was a buzz around the league in week number one that did produce such a strong number?
Well, the basic fundamental of the league is, you know, football does not have to end in February. The basic fundamental of the league is, listen, football is truly America's game. And there's an appetite for high quality professional football post Super Bowl. There's 75, 80 million NFL fans, and 25 or 30 million of those fans don't follow another sport. So putting another high quality product out there with a ton of guys, the majority of the guys in the league, not just with the Hot Shots, but with all the other teams, the majority of the guys in the league have NFL experience at varying levels. So, you know, this isn't a bunch of Division III, you know, retreads. It's really, really, really good players who, for some reason, have just not been able to sustain themselves in the NFL, but still have that ability and that talent to do so. But they need to play the game, right? The only way to stay in baseball shape is to play baseball. Yep. The only way to stay in football shape is to play football. And you can do all of the workouts and training and fitness you want in the off season, but you need live rounds and live snaps, live reps. And this is what we provide. And, you know, there was a couple games that were lopsided this weekend, but I haven't heard any feedback that says that the football was second rate. Everything we've heard and the feedback, both with the ratings, as you've mentioned, as well as just sort of the narrative around it was, we delivered good football, and now we just have to sustain it over the next 11 weeks.
Talking with Scott Brubaker about the Alliance, president of the Arizona Hotshots. They play at Memphis this coming weekend, now 1-0 on the season. Take me back to Sunday, and when did you know internally, like, okay, we've got something really good here in Arizona? Was it the first score? Was it before the game, after the game? When did you, as president of the team, Scott, look out and say, you know what, we've got this done?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, Brad. You know, that's always the, I've been doing this for 30 years
in
professional sports, and the anxiety we always have from a business standpoint is we just don't have any control over the product. We're charged with selling it and marketing it and doing the PR and community around it, and we don't have any control over it. So it's kind of the same anxiety. But I'll tell you, Rick Neuheisel and Phil Savage, our GM, I could not have a better couple of guys to work with and in parallel with. And, over the course of the last couple of months, we've been in lots of contact. And, they were very encouraged after minicamp. And then as we went into training camp, they were very encouraged, saw a lot of signs of good things. But, again, you don't know. You don't know until you put the ball in the 25 and take that first snap and go. We had a great indication in San Antonio when we had our practice game against Birmingham and beat them pretty handily. And John Wolford rose to the top as our starting quarterback. So we felt really, really good going into the game yesterday. Then I think we had six three and outs between the two teams to start the game, and there was a little anxiety, and then bing bang boom, we put together a great drive and sort of uncorked the scoring bottle, and it turned out to be a real lively game, and really satisfied and happy the Hotshots came out on top.
Okay, this may be a behind the scenes curtain, but on a business side, you're walking around the stadium or you're sitting in the box, you're down on the sideline, wherever you were for the game. What were your what were you hearing in terms of compliments, questions, concerns, things you look at and say, okay, we've got to do better the next time around in terms of what? Fill in the blank.
The goal in our business is from an operations standpoint. You can plan like crazy and then stuff comes up.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is always to have the stuff that comes up be not noticed by the fan, or have the fans not affected. Maybe annoyed is the best I accept, but not really affected. Their game experience is not affected. So we had a lot of little things come up, and they just come up in real time. And again, look behind the curtain. Thankfully, I've got a great team here that's loaded with success or loaded with years
vets.
In our business.
You got vets. You got veterans.
Yeah, we got veterans. And there's nothing our team hasn't seen. Joey Artigue is my head of operations, stadium operations. Young guy I've known since he was 5 years old. And dad, Ray Artigue's a very prominent gentleman in the sports world here in the Valley. And he was charged with a lot of different things and did a great job. And again, when the little things come up, we rectify them under the cover of darkness, hopefully.
Yeah.
And put them on our list of things to have not, go wrong again. But, back to your original, the feedback was really, really positive. And I thought, again, we got through the 6-3 and outs. And when there was a little bit of a lull in the crowd and the crowd, responded and lots of emotion, lots of passion. And then social media this morning with us just lit up. great, you know, great engagement. You know, I'm not, we our followers almost doubled, and, you know, followers is great. We've got to have them, but the real metric of how you're doing is how the engagement is, the likes and the comments. And I mean, at 7 o'clock this morning, we had 300 comments already on our Instagram page, and that's just growing from there. So those are the indicators that, you know, we got a little bit of a buzz going. Everybody's excited about it. We're really, I'm grateful we get to go on the road for 2 weeks and prep for week four, hopefully with a win or two of those road games. And if we can come back 2-1 or 3-0 for week four, we're going to be on to something pretty special.
All right, before I get you out of here, how about for you personally? Because your background here in Arizona was with the Diamondbacks, among other sports, mm-hmm. but primarily the Diamondbacks. 81 yep. games, it's 81 nights to get prepped. You have a 10-game homestand, 10 games in a row. You've got to make sure things are turned night after night after night.
Right.
How about this space where you don't have another home game for, what, 21 days, 20 days, something like
yeah.
that,
and
just the space for you?
Yeah, you know, somebody asked me about that last night after the game, because I recall back, you know, when we opened on March 31st, 1998 with the Diamondbacks, and it was this big crescendo, right? All 3 week, 3 years of work
right.
leading into this game. And, you know, we had so many things going on and so many operational things going on. And, you know, overall, I mean, there was plenty of things that went wrong, but not very many when it over the grand scheme of things. And I remember going home after that game and kind of doing what I did last night. It's basically get horizontal on the floor and sort of detox. And the difference was we had to get her going the next day. I think yep. we had a 9-game homestand to start the year. So now at least it's, hey, detox, get back to the office first thing in the morning and start prepping for, you know, 3 weeks from now. So there's a difference. But the unfair comparison is we only play 5 games versus we play 81,
mm-hmm.
You know, with the D-backs. We play 5, so we can't afford to not get it right every single time because there's only 5 chances we have
right.
For home games. And so it's the same yet different, but I enjoyed the heck out of the day yesterday. It was tons of tension in my gut. For the last week or so, and God, to get that first touchdown, Brad, was released a ton of tension, and then to close him out at the end and put a great offensive and defensive show out there, it worked out great. But we're back at it first thing this morning.
Good stuff. Appreciate your time as always, Scott. Thanks.
You got it, my man. Take care.
Scott Brubaker, president of the Arizona Hotshots. They play at Memphis, the Express of Memphis, this coming weekend. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Welcome in, everyone, to the Inside Lane here on Sports360AZ.com, where we go inside the career and some of the life of some of the greatest drivers to hail from the state of Arizona. I'm your host, Devin Henry, and we are ready. It is Sunday. It's the beginning of all racing around the world, basically. It's the Daytona 500, and we are ready to kick off with a driver who's done pretty well there the past few years. Join us on the Inside Lane. He's a back-to-back International Kart Federation champion, the 2004 Star Mazda Series champion, and the 2007 ARCA Rookie of the Year, entering his 11th Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series season. Driver of the Front Row Motorsports loves number 34 Ford Mustang from Glendale, Arizona. It's Michael McDowell. Michael, thanks for joining me, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on. That's quite the introduction.
Good. I'm glad. I got to get you pumped up. But first of all, man, it's been like freezing. I live in Glendale. I woke up this morning. It's like in the 30s. I almost got frost on the windshield. Do I need to buy a ticket to Daytona right now? How's the weather in Daytona?
Well, today it's not very nice. It's kind of cold and rainy here, actually. But it's supposed to be real nice the rest of the week.
Well, that's good to hear because we need a little bit more sunshine than we did back on last Sunday for this Sunday's Daytona 500. You're getting ready for the 500. It's your second full year with Front Row Motorsports. I want to know the biggest difference because after you left Michael Waltrip Racing, you had mostly just one car ride versus you and a few guys in the garage. What's the biggest difference now that you're on a team with now 3 cars with the addition of Matt Tift?
Yeah, just the level of support and, you know, just as my career has gone through the years, just getting with a team like Front Row that has the resources and has all the parts and pieces and equipment and people you need to be successful. And it's been growing and expanding the last 2 years and really the last 5 years for them. But, you know, this being my second season with the team, we just been able to hire some really great people in the off season, and excited to have Matt Tift on board and to have three cars, you know, to work with and to push each other. And, you know, this is a great opportunity to have, you know, three fast Mustangs at Daytona, and hopefully we can make a big impact.
So for the duels on Thursday, you'd line up next to your teammate, David Reagan, in the number 38. Going to tomorrow, for those of you who don't know, that's how Daytona and NASCAR sets the field. Basically, the top two in qualifying, they're locked in. Everyone else, they race for their position. And now you've had some exciting trips to Daytona. Last year was a top 10. Last July, you were making me jump out of my seat as you take the lead, slingshotting through everyone. You cracked the top five here before. You've done a lot of success at Daytona. Tomorrow's it's the real first race of the 2019 season. What's so different about Daytona? When you roll in your hauler, in your motorhome, whatever, you strap into the car and you go, I know I can go out and win this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun to know that you have a shot at it. And, you know, over the years, like you said, this has been my best track, and I've had the most opportunity here at Daytona. And so you know that, you know, coming back every year, you know, when you drive through that tunnel, you go, this could be the one. This could be the time that you pull into victory lane. And, you know, and the atmosphere here at Daytona is just so, you know, it's so unique. It's unlike any other racetrack that we go to. Just knowing, you know, the prestigiousness of this race and what's on the line, you know, you can feel that when you drive through the tunnel.
And, of course, there's a lot of stuff going on. The whole speed weeks, day by day, but something that not a lot of people, I think, know about you. The guys who really do follow you know this, but you are a very religious person. You are a man of faith, and you go out and you basically host events. You do a lot of things, spreading your religion, your beliefs. Take me through the intertwining of your faith, your racing, and your family every week at the racetrack for basically 38 weeks out of the year.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's simple. You know, I'm a race car driver. It's what I do. That's my profession, but that's not who I am. And so really the intertwining is just normal. It's just the everyday life of, you know, just being a father and a husband. And for me, that's the priority. And so, you know, when there's opportunities at the races to share my faith and to, you know, to talk about racing, talk about my faith, talk about how God has used this, you know, platform and the opportunities I've had through it is, you know, it's really natural for me. It's not something I have to think a whole lot about. And so it's been fun to, you know, just to be able to have an impact and have a platform. And for me, that's, you know, a very important part of it. And it's cool to see, you know, fans and to see people embrace, you know, faith, especially in our sport of NASCAR. And, you know, at the racetrack here last Sunday, we had a church service right in the middle of one of the injectors. And it was really fun just to see, you know, 700 people coming out and worshiping and having a church service right in the middle of the racetrack.
So I'm going to step back out of the infield, back onto the track. A little bit into the future, ISM Raceway, the Ticket Guardian 500, March 8th, 9th, and 10th, coming up here in just a few weeks. And last fall, you went out and you scored 16th. That was your best run at ISM Raceway. You mentioned that's definitely the best run that you've had here in your home state of Arizona, being from Glendale, Arizona. What's it like living, you know, earlier on the west side in your life, and now every year you get to come back to the west side of Phoenix, Arizona, and being able to go out and race at a home track?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you know, growing up in the valley and just, you know, I was there, you know, until I really moved to North Carolina to pursue my NASCAR career. And so to come home and see friends and family and, have all that support. And then, you know, with the racetrack, it's always been just so much support and so much fun, especially driver introductions, things like that, where, you know, they announce you're from Glendale, Arizona, the crowd, you know, goes crazy. And yeah, I don't get that a lot of places. So it's always fun to have that extra support. And, It's really neat too with the tracks done, and just ISM Raceway has just turned out to be such a beautiful facility and an awesome place to bring your family and to you know, to really take in NASCAR as a sport, and the experience you get to have with the racetrack, and you just, the access is really neat, and really proud that that's my home track, and excited for them and continue to grow and build as they you know, as they bring in that new facility.
$178 million they put in there. I don't know what the heck I'd do with $178 million, but it might look something like that. With all the renovations, there's a modern margarita, there's a beer garden, they moved the start-finish line, there's new fan interaction stuff, this, that, this, and that. Fans go in the garage, but out of everything you could have taken a picture of and tweeted, you tweeted the on the side of the garage, the names of the driver's board. That's, I guess that might be what struck you the most out of the $178 million or something. But just take me back to your impressions the first time walking into the brand new ISM Raceway back in November. And how important is it for the sport to have these fan interactions with the drivers here for a whole weekend?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of two parts. Is when you first walked in, it kind of felt like you were at a completely different racetrack. You know, I almost got lost trying to find where the garages were at. But then when you get on the racetrack, the racetrack's the racetrack, and everything there other than moving the start-finish line really felt the same. And so just the fact of that is that they were able to take, you know, an iconic short track on the NASCAR schedule and keep it the same, but create such an incredible fan experience is really cool. And, you know, the engagement, like you said, and to be able to have fans that can get close to the action and have access and see what goes on behind the scenes, and it's, you know, really important to generate that next generation of car enthusiasts that that are into racing and are into cars and motorsports in general, and it's fun that we're able to do that.
All right, I don't have a lot of time up, but real quick, I want to do something called quick time. I got some rapid fire questions. I want some rapid fire answers. You ready to set quick time, Michael?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so you and your teammate, David Reagan, you guys are almost the exact same age. You're literally like 364 days apart or something. But what is the average age now of FRM with the addition of your youngster, Matt Tift?
26.
26. A little bit on the young side because Matt is pretty young, but it's actually just 30. It's not that bad.
Well,
Hendrick is pretty bad.
I
feel bad for Jimmy. He seems like a grandpa over there now. What is your favorite car to race, regardless of track? And this does include your BMX days as a kid.
Champ car.
Nice, man. All right, I know I'm out of time with you, so I'll cut it off right there, but can't wait to see you on Thursday. You start 12th in duel number two. The Daytona 500 is Sunday on Fox. Ticket Guardian 500 at ISM Raceway March 8th, 9th, and 10th. Would love to see an Arizona-born driver in victory lane at, I don't know, either of them sound good to me. How about that, Michael?
How about both?
I like that too. How about that? Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Michael. It's a pleasure talking to you. Always love catching up with the Arizona drivers, and best of luck to you on Sunday and, of course, on Thursday.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate it too, Michael. That's Michael McDowell, driver of the Front Row Motorsports Ford Mustang number 34. This is the Inside Lane. Check out all of our episodes. This is Arizona driver number 3 in NASCAR. You can see the Alex Bowman interview and the J.J. Yaley interview on Sports360AZ.com. I'm Devin Henry. We'll see you next time on the Inside Lane.